Welcome to the Anime That Didn't Make Us, a podcast about anime that we could have been nostalgic for if not for the curse of geography. Joining us to pick an anime from when they were 8 to 10 years old, it's Gary Hedges.
Hello!
Hello, Gary. And on this episode, we are going to be watching the first episodes of Chicken Takken, Jushin Liger, and Tokyo Pig. And we'll start off with Chicken Takken, my pick. First published... First published in 1982 in the pages of Science and Learning, Chicken Takken is an educational gag manga series by Cyborg 009's Shotaro Ishinomori, or 009, I can't remember which way around it is. Produced by Studio Pierro for Fuji Television, the show features Alien Prince, Chicken Duck, and his advisor, Takken Hat, who are trying to protect the Earth from the villainous Dr. Bell. Aiding them in this endeavor is teenager Miko Minamida. And the original air date of this was Monday, 9th of April, 1984. And so what would I have been watching instead of this? We go, as we normally do, to the BBC Genome, where I discover that afternoon I would have been watching The New Adventures of Mighty Mouse, part 14 of the story The Great Space Chase. I think I hated this, if I remember correctly, and yet I would have still watched it because it was a cartoon.
You hated Mighty Mouse or this arc?
I hated Mighty Mouse all the way up until the Ralph Bakshi version of it, which was later in the 80s. But the BBC would have also shown.
I didn't realise there were multiple versions of Mighty Mouse.
Yeah, because there was like the old shorts. This is the Filmation version, I think from like 1980 or something.
Which one had the Here I Come to Save the Day theme tune?
I think he was stuck that in all of them.
Okay.
That cool. Was his general song.
I don't know which one I watched. It wasn't bad. It was odd.
Then we've got Busker, a show I don't recall at all. A series of four programs. There aren't many trains to Weybury Junction, so Christopher Lillycrap can always find time to tell a tale about the back alley kids. We always found it hilarious as a child that there was a man on children's television called Lillycrap. Then there was Lassie, the TV series, who apparently was now working for the US Forest Rangers. And in this episode, she had to rescue a pet raccoon when it strays into danger.
I like Lassie, you know. I don't know what iteration I've seen, but Cagnanti's dog looked like Lassie.
I liked
the dog and I liked this. Oh, it's about a dog. What more could you want?
It was about a dog. I could want it to be about a cat. I didn't like dogs.
Lassie wasn't the best live-action dog.
Oh, I mean...
No, it's true.
They're all the best.
Plus it was old. I think that was the other thing. Live-action dogs were Benji and the Littlest Hobo. Those I was fine with. Lassie...
Yeah, definitely.
Lassie was like an old program being repeated for me.
Lassie was just... It was along with Flipper, they were just... I don't know, I just didn't get on with Lassie.
Boring.
It just felt boring. Whereas, for me, Littlest Hobo was great, probably because it had a better theme tune than Lassie. And Benji was epic, because you had Benji's Axe and the Alien Prince, yes, which was right up my alley.
Yeah.
I don't know what Benji is.
Benji's another famous Canadian dog, I think. Mm. I believe he's like the... Well, is he the Canadian Lassie, or is Littlest Hobo the Canadian Lassie?
Ooh, good shout, don't know.
I think they're both
looks
Canadian.
Looks like a biter. Looks like it would give you a nip.
Or maybe not. Hang on. Higgins was... maybe Benji isn't Canadian. I may be wrongly allocated. Let me have a look here. Right, Benji, fictional character.
Oh, he's a real dog. He's,
No, Texas Benji's from. Okay,
I'm getting... Zach's the alien isn't real, though.
No, I'm getting mixed up.
The CG on that was awful.
Littlest Hobo's
definitely... Well, that was pretty good back in the day.
Littlest Hobo's definitely Canadian, because there's a... episode of Corner Gas. I don't think until I saw the episode of Corner Gas that I realised the dog was Canadian, because I probably wouldn't have been able to distinguish a Canadian and American accent when I was a child.
I don't know what these ones are that you're referring to.
Littlest Way Hobo before. Is basically...
I know Littlest Hobo through, I guess, reference, but...
He's like the Incredible Hulk. He's like the Incredible Hulk TV series or the Fugitive TV series where basically he comes into the life of a bunch of people, helps them, but then at the end he leaves.
Oh.
He's a hobo. He's got
Is there like a sad song as he walks off?
Oh, iconic theme song, yes.
Just like the Hulk.
Yes. Well, no, even more. Like,
is it?
Yes, the Littlest Hobo theme song is a great song.
It's awesome.
When we've done the podcast, check it out for yourself. Apologies to Benji for suggesting he was Canadian. Apologies to Canadians for suggesting Benji was Canadian.
Benji's not still around. I put money on it.
Well, I think they just, like Lassie, they just keep on getting new Benjis.
Don't spoil the magic, Brian.
Because apparently there was a Benji film in 2018, so.
Same guy?
It was a reboot, apparently.
Ooh.
Anyway, Benji wasn't even on this day. Moving on, the news round, not with John Craven, apparently it was with Paul McDowell this day. And then there was Blue Peter. I somehow have managed to lose the notes in all that Benji discussion.
I've lost... You've said news round, and according to your notes, it wasn't on.
That's because I'd left it off. Because I wasn't going to comment on it. Yes. And then keeping up our streak of sexual predators being mentioned on every single episode, Rolf Harris's Cartoon Time was on.
As a kid, I wanted to join that club. Now, as an adult, I'm glad I didn't.
More you know.
Yeah, quite.
I used to love Rolf, like, when he'd draw the kangaroo and all that stuff, that was great.
Yeah.
I used to find him hilarious.
I could remember the news being on at 20 to 6, though. That's... And then Rolf Harris's Cartoon Time being on at 20 to 12. 20 to 12, 20 to 7. Damn it. I've not even had my tablets yet today. I've got no excuse. And then that was followed by Blue Thunder. The TV...
Ooh, that sounds like it's about a helicopter.
It is about a helicopter, yes.
Is it?
Spin-off of the movie.
Maybe I've subconsciously seen the cover for the film and just... Oh, okay. I'm less impressed with me guessing right then. We're less impressed now.
Decidedly 80s.
Yes, it's basically a science helicopter. It's got loads of weapons that a normal helicopter probably has as well. It's called Blue Thunder, so it's super cool.
Second-rate Airwolf.
No, Airwolf is a rip-off of Blue Thunder. Is it not?
Because the
Blue Thunder movie was 83. And it's got Roy Schneider in it, hasn't it?
Mm.
Airwolf's 84, so yeah. Airwolf was a rip-off of Blue Thunder. Of course, they're all... Yep. I mean, and also of Knight Rider.
That's what jumps to mind.
I do believe. Knight Rider 82.
Did it ever blow up in the end? Did it die, Blue Thunder? Like,
I
end
don't.
Of the series, killed?
I feel like it never lived up to my expectations. I have very little memory of what the actual show was like. To the point where I'd forgotten that Dana Carvey was in it. Like, way before...
Wayne's World.
Yeah, way before Saturday Night Live and Wayne's World. And then I probably would have gone to bed. At age 8, as I was at this point. Mm. Probably would not have stayed up to watch. Maybe I would have watched Points of View for 10 minutes, but I would not have watched Panorama, the Prime Minister, where Robin Day interviewing Margaret Thatcher. The UK number one at this time was Hello by Lionel Richie.
Is it tea you're looking for?
Did like the song at the time. Don't like the song now.
Creepy video.
Yeah, which he's made.
Is it kind of creepy?
It's like a blind woman's making a bust of his face, and it looks nothing like him, but it's like,
yeah, it's
gigantic.
It's well, I mean, not everybody's a professional sculptor. Give her a break. I think you said she's blind, so.
I mean, it is an iconic video in remembering how bad it is, because it's still around the time where no one's really got to grips with what a music video should be like.
He nailed it with Dancing on the Ceiling.
Yes, that's a much better one. Then, on to the episode itself. Episode 1, The Spring Breeze Rides In on a Gag. Our Alien Arrival. And this is directed by Keiji Hayakawa, who only directed up to episode 14 of the 23 episodes this got. Also responsible for Bell and Sebastian, which we've talked about on Dynamite in the Brain before. Mrs. Pepperpot and Future Boy Conan 2, a show I did not know existed until I was looking up his credits. Apparently that, like, arrived in the late 90s. Screenplay by Yu Yamamoto up until episode 12, who wrote a lot of the early scripts for Eurosite Sura and created the J9 series. Storyboard by the director. Episode director was also by the series director, and the character design is Yoshihiro Awada, and this is the only thing they're credited as being the character designer on. So, let me get my copious notes as to what happens in this episode. So we get with a this is the era's opening theme, where it feels like, it's all about a teenage girl's love. It feels like, quite kind of like,
yeah.
It's kind of like the themes are like straight out of like American 60s hits, early 60s hits, but then it's got the very synth based. Since Eurosite Sura, this is kind of what a lot of these comedy shows' theme tunes are like. And we're introduced to Dr. Bell, the villain of this piece, and his henchman Gigi Gigi. And they have managed to steal the Warachin Encyclopedia in their spaceship, which resembles a fish with a bell on the top. Dr. Bell says Beru a lot, and Gigi Gigi says Gigi a lot.
Oh, it's very annoying.
It's like Pokemon Precursor.
Yes. It is Shigeru Chiba, the voice of Buggy, and many of my other favourite characters playing Dr. Bell. The highlight of which is the ending theme, which we'll get to at the end. So they got fish spaceship and they're being pursued by the Menfo, the spaceship belonging to Chicken and Takan and their friend Mechatan. And their UFO, it's basically a UFO, but it is just a upturned cup ramen bowl. And if you hadn't got the joke, they drive it home by having some people eat cup ramen later in the episode. they've been sent from Star R as the last chance to recover the encyclopedia from the evil Dr. Bell. Goodness knows what the other chances were if this is their last chance. Mechatan is like, he's the biggest of the lot, but he's very nervous. He's anxious about flying in a spaceship, as he probably should be, as they end up crashing into one another and end up in the Milky Way via some sort of hyperspace jump. He crashes the UFO into the house of the family, the Minamida family, which kind of looks a bit like a bird itself. The mother of the family is played by Fumi Hirano, the voice of Lum. The character designs for the humans are like very atypical for anime. They've kind of got more like human proportions than anime human proportions. And so Chicken sets sights on the teenage daughter Miko and instantly falls in love with her.
Aww.
But then she makes a comparison to E.T. And he doesn't appreciate it, so he tries to act all tough that he's not cute, and tells Takan to get these photos out. Takan's like, no, I don't think... And he's got like a folder of knockout babes from his home planet who are in love with him. And he's basically like, well, maybe an ugly human could be one of these as well. He's basically negging her, isn't he? Then we go to the old hide the alien from mum sequence, which is more complicated because a cat shows up, their pet cat called Nico. We get the old gag of, like, they have a dust bowl fight, him, Chicken and Takan, and then the cat gets out the dust bowl ball, but it carries on going.
I didn't pick up on that at the time, but I always liked that. It's something I always find amusing to see.
They kind of make up, and then just before the eye catch, in case you forgot it was 1984, Chicken is like climbing over Miko and grabs a jumper and pulls it down slightly. Also, if you get later on, you get some panty shots, as also to remind you that it is 1984.
Yeah.
There's a fair share of them, isn't there, really?
Well, yeah, we'll get to the next show we talk about. It hasn't really changed much later.
No, it hasn't.
Anthony has picked the most wholesome of the shows this week.
I have. These pervs.
And considering who it's from, that's the most surprising aspect. The eye catch is like one of those whack-a-mole games. Then we get back to Bell. They're looking through a periscope in their fish spaceship, which also apparently doubles as a submarine. And they reckon they could blend in on Earth, which is optimistic, given that one's in like, he's like a tiny man in a, I guess, a hooded robe, but his teeth are sticking out the bottom of the hood. And
see, I didn't think of him as that literal. I thought that was his, was his body.
It may be as well, but more to the point, Gidgey Gidgey is just an orb with four legs coming out of it. So they get out the, they're gonna like do some evil. So let's get out the Warachin Encyclopedia, which turns out to be a computer. And, but in order to do evil, once you switch the on, you need the password. And they're like, we forgot the password. Where's the password? So they have to go search for the password. So they get the password, they put it in, and they go, okay, what do you want to do? We want to do bad things. And it's like, you have to like specifically input the bad things like you would in a text adventure from the game, from the day. It's probably, Anthony probably never played them. It's probably too young to play text adventure games.
Oh, I know what one is. I'm not, I had a, it's not really the same thing. I had a choose your own adventure book, which is probably the closest.
Yeah, but these books, you'd have to like say, pick, it's like, it's when, Elliot does his action castle. It's basically.
Yeah,
Gotta type the actions and it will either let you do the action or not.
Yeah, you have to make sure you've worded it in exactly the same way the guy who programmed the game would have worded it.
Yeah.
And they basically elect to do cold things to the world. At which point, thinking this was based on, it came out of an educational magazine, I was like, oh, is this going to be an educational segment? Nope, there is nothing educational in this show at all. Meanwhile, they're going to hide the aliens again from Mum. When they get the UFO, they take Miko with them. Then she ends up ice skating on the ice floes that the encyclopedia's made it happen. They're going to freeze the entire world. But when she starts slipping around on the ice very gracefully, like she's ice skating, Dr. Bell falls for her as well.
And he sees her in like a leotard.
He does, yes.
Oh yeah, he gets like a dream of her being like a figure skater.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether he did or the animators did.
Oh gosh. I didn't want to think of that.
Mechatan, he looks a bit like, to describe him, he's a bit like Mr. Atom from the old Captain Marvel comics, the Shazam Captain Marvel, not the Marvel Captain Marvel. Kind of like a missile-shaped head. They fight with him, they get the encyclopedia back, they defrost the world, but now the world's flooded, because of all the ice which has been melted, and they're kind of like, well, that's enough. They end up using the UFO as a sledge before that happens. He gets a kiss for good luck. A running theme, much like Jushin Liger, I can't really remember what happened. The ending was so underwhelming, I can't really remember what happened.
Well, it's like they melted the ice, but in doing so, the book got knocked out of both their hands and went flying.
Okay, so they've got to look for the book, I can take it.
Well, no, because you then see a scene where Dr. Bell is draining water into the submarine and the book lands back in the submarine. So the episode ends with Dr. Bell having the book again.
Presumably that's going to happen every episode.
Every episode, yeah.
Every episode they get the book back. But it's the fact that, like you said, that they flood the city and they kind of say, oh, it's okay, the water will run back to the sea eventually, and kind of leave it like, oh, we've stopped them icing everywhere. The fact that everything's flooded is kind of not our problem. We'll just leave that. It's like a half finished.
Yeah, I think it's the influence of Urasaya again, where
you just be fine the next episode.
Everything resets the next episode.
Yeah.
Except, of course, they've got the device of this book, so yeah, they're probably going to have to make sure it ends up in the hands of Dr. Bell at the end of every episode, so it can happen again. The next episode, we get introduced apparently to Miko's girl gang, the Kyunkyuns.
I turned off as soon as the main bulk of this episode was done. I was like, oh, thank God.
You missed out. Off it went. You missed out on the ending theme, which is Dr. Bell rapping about how evil he is.
Yeah. And getting startled by his own kind of backing skull lighting up.
I mean, I'd seen it before, but I'd forgotten that that was a thing, because it was such a long time since I did that rapping, anime rap panel, because it came up in the research then. But now, I was like, oh, I've seen this before, this is great. It's Shigeru Chiba rapping. I quite enjoyed this. I take it you did not, Anthony.
I definitely did not. I think this was by far the worst of the bunch. And perhaps more so is the fact that I didn't watch... I watched this last of the three, because when I put it on my iPad, the episode basically didn't have the subs attached. It was a separate file. And so I was like, oh, I've got to sit at the computer and watch it. So I was already kind of like, oh, you know, sat up in an office chair watching it. Did not appeal to me. I would have hated this as a kid, and I hate it now. This is not what I want to be watching. If this was on as a kid, it would have been turned off quicker than if I caught it as an adult. Because as an adult, I'd perhaps be more, I'll give it a chance, I'll watch to the end of the episode. Whereas as a kid, I think I would have had less tolerance. Everything about it, the annoying characters. I like Miko, the girl. I think she's good. And I feel the other characters just, they're too annoying.
I see. I try to think.
Biru Biru over and over again. Gidgey Gidgey. I don't like that kind of.
I think I would have been fine with this as a kid. Yeah, I think I would have enjoyed it. Because I'm trying to think where my line is for annoying characters. And it's my line is saccharine and sentimental characters. Or characters who would try to be too good and teach children how to behave.
You don't like that.
Yeah, or basically I'm thinking of Denver, the Last Dinosaur.
Oh, God. Yeah,
as being my
considering I sat and watched Denver, the Last Dinosaur as a kid, I would have probably quite happily sat and watched Chicken Tucken.
Yes.
Because the gags would have kept me going. I think, and I actually thought Dr. Bell was actually quite a fun villain. It's that kind of the villain that is almost wants to be more evil than he actually is, and I like those types of villains.
Yes, because the joke is that they want to be evil, but then when they're actually asked how they want to be evil, it's just like, well, we want to be evil. Okay, cold evil. Right, that'll do.
Yeah, they don't know. Yeah, I thought that was great.
As I was writing the description, I was like, this sounds a lot like Howard the Duck. And I was like, I don't mind. It's like, I know Shitaro Ishinomori, was definitely influenced by, Western comics early on in his career. But then I looked up the comic version of this, and it's quite different to what the anime version looks like. So I'm going to guess it's probably Yu Yamamoto, or just a mere coincidence that you've got a alien duck falling for a redhead, and the villain is Bell-themed.
What's the villain in Howard the Duck?
Dr. Bong.
Dr. what?
Bong. B-O-N-G.
Dr. Bong.
I'm a little stuffed up, so it's hard to need to pronounce Bong.
Oh, no, I heard it, and I was like, thinking, really? Okay. But I guess it now, Bong like a bell.
Yes.
All right. he looks badass. He's like a Dr. Doom looking typical character. I like that. Yeah, I was so annoyed with this.
I think it's typical of the time as well, that whole idea of this, like, it's an alien duck and it's the first thing that he sees is a human female. And first of all, he's saying they're ugly. But then the next thing you know, actually, you know, he's saying that they're attractive. And
well, no, he fell in love with
four. He's enthralled with the idea of panty shots and stuff. And it's like he's never seen human anatomy before.
He's trying to get her interested.
Yeah, he's playing hard to get.
He says maybe I could add you.
Oh,
to my
of course, yes,
of
you're right. He says, he says she's ugly because he's playing hardball.
Yes, because she was being mean, comparing him to ET.
That was actually quite funny. The amount of times that she laughed at him I thought it was quite funny.
She's the best character. I just hate that she's got to put up with all these imbeciles.
It does appear that she's got some sort of, like, Hanna-Barbera-style gag as well. I think there's, like, 4 or 5 episodes have been fan-subbed now with this, so I could watch more if I want to watch more.
I like her fashion. Does her fashion change, or is it, like, is that her look for the rest of the show?
Well, they've got their gag jackets, haven't they? We see in the...
Mike, I might get a gang jacket. If I was one of the gang jackets.
I'm also wondering if her mum's inability to cook is a reoccurring gag.
It's the 80s, it will be, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as good as the gag in Tokyo Pig about cooking. But
we'll get to that later.
On to Jushin Liger. Jushin Liger, part of a multimedia project. It was created by Go Nagai and Dynamic Planning in March 1989, with both a manga and anime released in that same month. The comic ran in Comic Bomb Bomb, while the anime was produced by Sunrise and aired on TV Asahi. Additionally, professional wrestler Keiichi Yamada was given a masked gimmick of Jushin Liger in April of the same year. The costume would evolve as the character evolved in the series, eventually becoming the Jushin Thunder Liger we know and love to this day. The series follows the adventures of Ken Tiger, who can transform into the biomechanical monster Jushin Liger to protect the Earth from the invading Dragonite army. And it originally aired on Saturday, March the 11th, 1989. And what Gary and me could have been watching. Were you born at this point yet, Anthony?
Yeah, I was. I had to think. Yeah, I was.
How old would you be?
One and a bit.
So you probably weren't watching these TV programs.
No.
Saturday. So you've got Saturday morning TV programs. You've got Saturday Starts Here with Peter Simon. A bumper package of Saturday Entertainment, which we have Ovid Video.
Ovid Video, I love that. It's got another classic example of catchy 80s TV themes.
I hated this show.
Really? Oh, it was so wacky and offbeat with random TVs popping out of the ground. Long before
it looks like the kind of thing it. Brian would love.
It does. Villainous Snake, what more do you want?
This is Canadian. I'll get the right things. Canadian this time. I watched it, but I didn't like it. I don't know why I watched so many cartoons I didn't actually like.
I think the one thing I liked about Ovid Video was the fact that Ovid was a character, but you never, although he, like the intro shows him as the main character, it never felt like he was, because it kind of focused on all the other characters all the time.
Yeah.
Ovid's an anagram of video.
Yes.
Didn't know.
That's why it's called Ovid Video.
Why not just call it Ovid?
Pass.
Yeah. Ovid and the Gang is also the name.
Is that the Canadian title?
La Bande à Ovid. It's also Belgian as well. It's produced by the same people who made Mega Babies, Sharky and George, and The Little Flying Bears. I've only heard of Sharky and George out of that.
Yes, I love Sharky and George.
Yeah, I was fine with Sharky and George. Even cool though, reminds me of that blackcurrant yogurt flavoured, blackcurrant yogurt sandwich I tried to make. then we had Roland's Rat Race, a quiz show for kids hosted by Roland Rat. I was surprised Roland Rat was still a going concern in 1989.
Yeah, he certainly was a part of my childhood.
And then you had Going Live with Sarah Green and Philip Schofield.
Oh, the old young Schof. Would this have been Gordon the Gopher?
It would have been Gordon the Gopher, yes. You'd got guests from Grange Hill, Cartoon Action from Visionaries and Muppet Babies, Andy Crane and his lookalikes, Heat 5 of the Young Entertainer of the Year, and press conference guest, Dr. Marion Davis. And you also had Trevor and Simon on there as well. I would have definitely been watching this.
Yeah. Fond memories of Visionaries, not so fond memories of Muppet Babies. That was probably when I switched over to see what was on ITV.
Man, I mean, it depends which era. If it's like the early episodes when they're being animated by the good Japanese studios, pretty good. Then in the evening you had Flying Doctors, the Australian soap, followed by Jim Will Fix It, continuing our streak. Little and Large, where apparently they were dressed up as the Proclaimers at the start of the show. Special guests, Ali Bongo, Nuts and Bolts, and June, yeah, and Nuts and Bolts. I think the other ones are just the people who appear. Bob Says Opportunity Knocks. This is when they brought Opportunity Knocks back with Bob Monkhouse.
Oh, I know Bob Monkhouse. Here's one.
Yeah, Opportunity Knocks was a talent show.
Oh,
so you'd come
nice.
On. If you won, you came back the next week, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Oh. What was that other show Bob Monkhouse did, the good one?
We did lots of shows. Which one is
Well, I'm going to say his famous one.
Well, I think it depends how old you are as to which one is his famous
Think of
one.
My age and think of It Would Be On During the Day.
Okay.
Probably reruns, I would imagine.
Television.
Is it a quiz show?
You had a bunch of quiz shows. Wipeout.
Yes, Wipeout's a brilliant show.
Previously hosted by Paul Daniels.
Ah. Yeah, I do like Wipeout.
Not to be confused with the later show called Wipeout, which involves...
Oh, that'd be different. he's dead, isn't he?
He is dead, yes.
Bob Monkhouse, yeah. Oh.
And then that's followed by Bergerac, the,
detective,
Channel Island detective show, yes.
Pretty sure I'd have been tucked up in bed by this point.
Yeah, I would have been able to watch this though. Cause I was a big boy now. and then I don't think they had Midnight Caller, which I don't think I'd have watched. I should probably go back and watch it now because I do like Gary Cole and he's in every episode because he's the main character. And Carrot Cop, I'm trying to think, I'd have been 13, would I have been allowed to stay up? I might have been allowed to stay up and watch Carrot Confidential. I would eventually be allowed to stay up and watch Jasper Carrot.
I was going to say, I used to watch Canned Carrot, which I'm assuming came after this.
I think so, yeah. Also, over
so young.
Over on BBC Two, it was Saturday Night Clive. I don't know whether it was the episode, there's the one. Have you seen the clips of when he played Legend of the Galactic Heroes on there?
Nope.
Clive Anderson, is it?
Yes. Yeah. Not Clive
Didn't
Anderson. No,
show.
Sorry, Clive James. Yeah. Clive James.
Oh, I don't even know who that is. Oh, I know who he is, kind of. I see, way before my time.
Yep.
No, I think it was the following year he played some Legend of the Galactic Heroes. UK number one at the time was Too Many Broken Hearts by Jason Donovan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Never heard.
That takes me back.
You are lucky, Anthony.
Wait, you've never heard of Jason Donovan?
No, of course I've heard of him. Never heard that song.
It's really into the point where Stark Aitken and Waterbird were just producing absolute shite at that point.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you were a kid in the 80s, you could not go without hearing Jason Donovan. It's practically impossible.
Thankfully, I was just a baby.
Yeah. So, on to Jushin Liger. Episode 1, The Bio-Armor of Anger. Liger appears. The series is directed by Norio Kashima, who worked on Dirty Pair. Screenplay by Sho Aikawa, who would go on to write the first Full Metal Alchemist series and more recently Concrete Revolutio. Storyboard for this episode, Nishi Fukunaga. I think that's the name. This is the only credit I could find for them. So whether it's somebody else using a fake name because they weren't supposed to be doing work or whether they were someone looked at it because it's terrible, you never work in here again.
Naughty.
Or someone just wrote the name down wrong, maybe. Episode director, Osamu Sakita, go on to direct, or had already directed Superbook. I can't remember when Superbook came out. I think already may have done that. But mainly did episode direction, so many shows. He recently died last month in April. And animation director is Yorihisa Uchida, who did a similar role on Armored Police Metal Jack. which I mention because if I had to say a series that this resembled, it's Armored Police Metal Jack. Not necessarily in anything about the plot, or necessarily anything about the look, but particularly just the feel of the thing. It feels very similar. And the character design is also by Yorihisa Uchida. That may be the reason why. Maybe just the character design is the same. And our lead, Ken Tiger, is instantly recognisable if you've watched any show aimed at young boys for the past 30 plus years. It is Mayumi Tanaka, voice of Krillin, Luffy, and many, many other teenage boy leads in anime.
Big, fluffy black hair.
Yes. So, Gary, what happens in the first episode of Jushin Liger?
Well, we learn that Ken's a bit of a douche. Well, he's doing that whole thing, so a bit like the...
A bit like the duck in the previous, don't I?
Yeah, he's got a girl that he likes, but he decides the best way that he should get the attention of the girl he likes is to be mean to her. So the opening sequence is, I think they're on their way to school. I don't know what year they would have been at school, but he basically, as he's riding past, decides to flick up her skirt so that he can see her panties and makes a comment about what the design of her underwear is, before then crashing his bike.
Deserves it.
Yeah. He's then being teased by a bigger student who obviously reveals that he actually does like her. And then they get into a fight. He then makes a comment saying that he would never like her. I can't remember what he exactly says, but he again calls her a name. I think he calls her a pig, doesn't he, or something. And obviously she overhears that and then says that she doesn't like him either. And then they kind of progress on to school. And then... I don't know if do you see much of them at school? I think you kind of see them in the classroom.
They're in the classroom as the giant dragon's head crashes on the other side of the city.
It suddenly all goes a bit kind of Godzilla and just from out of space monsters landing. And I was quite surprised at how violent it was. It's sort of the monsters just appear and the first thing they do is start demolishing buildings. And you actually see sequences of them squashing people and burning them and whatnot.
Woo!
It's quite explosive, just mass murder. Then the army show up, and the army's helicopters don't do anything. They then send in the tanks, and the first tank shot makes a monster split into two, and then the subsequent tank shots do nothing to these two monsters that they're now are of, and all the tanks start getting squashed, and it's all looking rather dire at this point. It's sort of, at this point, lots of people are getting murdered and dying. And the army can't do anything. And then it's, Ken's is it his grandpa? It's grandpa, isn't it? That appears and makes a comment about the fact that Ken, needs to summon Liger. And Ken doesn't know what he's talking about.
This is after the girl he loves has been killed.
Which is a shock.
Yeah, she gets... I can't remember. Does she get...
She gets blown up, the helicopters crash into them.
Yeah.
Oh, poor girl.
Yeah, so he then... And his grandpa gets hit as well, or caught by a blast, although it doesn't kill him. So Ken decides, okay, I don't know how this is going to work, but I'm going to put my hand in the air and call Liger. And lo and behold, he gets bestowed with a... they refer to it as a bio-armor, don't they? And initially it looks as though he's inside a kind of robot suit, but it's, I'm not quite sure exactly how it works, but he basically is inside this giant Liger body that is huge, about the same size as the monsters. But he's got kind of, almost what look a bit like electrodes attached to him, so that when he moves, Liger moves. And he then begins to fight back against these invading alien monsters.
And then the rest of the episode is him fighting back against those alien monsters.
Pretty much, yeah. I kind of like the fact that he kind of doesn't know what's going on, and he's like, he feels like he's making things up as he goes along, like he invents a punch and he invents a kick. After dispatching of a couple of monsters, there's a new monster appears where it has blades, One of the blades cuts Liger, and you see it visibly damage the outside of Liger's armor. And then inside, you see that Ken suffers a similar kind of cut wound on his arm, suggesting that the two are obviously intrinsically linked. And then Ken says, oh, you know, if this is an all-powerful armor, clearly it needs a weapon. Where are the weapons? Oh, I know. If I just call out for a sword, I'll get a sword. So he does. And lo and behold, he gets given a sword and a shield.
The sword is cool.
The Liger sword is very cool. Yeah. The shield's cool too. So yeah, he gets the Liger sword. He then creates a move for the Liger sword called the Liger Slash, which basically dispatches of that monster. And yeah, he basically kind of kicks ass with it.
Yeah, and then there's two. He's standing in front of his grandfather and what's he called? His mate Dumpling.
Yep.
And then there's like two teenage girls who go and say, not bad for a beginner, who we've never seen up until this point in the show.
Yeah, you have no idea who they are, but they clearly know something about the Liger bioarmor.
Yeah, and they're notably in the ending credits as well.
Yep.
Also, scattered throughout the episode, there's also a B-plot about a news reporter whose name's Psycho. She's basically pretty much the same person out of Venus Wars, that type of character. Like, I'm going to get the great
scoop.
Report, the big scoop, even if it endangers me and everyone around me. Are you too much of a coward, cameraman? Give me that camera. I'm going to go into the battlefield and get a load of shots of this.
Pretty sure that's where April O'Neil came from as well, later on, in the Ninja Turtles.
That was around the same time, wasn't it? When did the first...
Actually, yeah, probably would have been. Yeah, 89, would have been. So, yeah, it's very April O'Neil-esque. In fact, I think she's even wearing a jumpsuit, so...
Also, like, the bad guys are confused as well, because when they first see the bio-armor, the one who's on the ground goes, oh, is that another creation of whatever the one who's in charge of creating their bio-armors made?
Yep.
So they get caught off guard. Otherwise, yeah, it's very much a lot of the beats of old Gona Guy stories, but transferred into the 90s, even though it's still 89, and also because it's 89... they've seen Alien and all the other things which have been influenced by Alien in the meantime.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like Mazinger by way of Guyver.
I wish it was more like Guyver in that it was a suit that he wore rather than a giant being. I think I would have enjoyed it. Not necessarily enjoyed it more, but I think it would appeal to me more. Because I like the idea of somebody getting put into a suit rather than controlling a big robot.
If you want to see someone wearing a Liger suit, there's a place you can do that.
Not for much longer,
Not
though.
That kind of suit.
Not for much longer.
Yeah, no, I think the clock's ticking on that
one. Well, he's retiring next Wrestle Kingdom.
Okay.
So this is his final year of wrestling. Yeah, also right at the start, he has like a dream of him fighting these monsters and wakes up and the granddad sees that his... Liger birthmark is glowing that he's got on his hand.
Yeah. So I'm guessing there's a lot more to that that we'll probably find out in the later episodes, because clearly the grandfather also knows all about it.
Yes. Yes, because otherwise, yeah, because you got to call out Liger. Fair enough. The day's going pretty badly.
Yeah. The other thing I was a bit confused by was there was this giant sort of floating stone tablet that drops down. And the grandfather makes a mention of the fact that the monsters mustn't be allowed to collect it. But you kind of got the impression that the tablet seemed kind of ominous and almost evil. And it was almost like I thought the tablet was part of their invasion strategy. But seemingly not. It just so happened to appear at the same time. And they were after it. And obviously Liger beating them fended them off. And then the tablet, I think, then just disappears. Again, I'm guessing that's something that gets fleshed out in the later episodes.
I would assume so. They have all got subtitles now, so how good they are, I don't know, but they may be the quality of the Tokyo Pig ones. But they are all fan-subbed in some way or means. So, yes, you can go and watch all of Jushin Liger if you like. Obviously, the theme tune is pretty much the same as Jushin Liger uses in the ring. Weirdly, they change the theme tune in the anime halfway through when he becomes Jushin Thunder Liger and looks more like the Jushin Thunder Liger, the wrestler that we know now.
What's the difference in design? Is it like a blue color or something?
It's got like white.
So
I think like the design is that in the anime, he's got like extra armor on top of what he's wearing at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Cause when he started as the wrestler, he looked more like Jushin Liger looks like in this anime, in this first episode that he does today.
It's like a ninja mask almost, rather than a...
Yeah, I guess it's more like a knight mask, I think, because once you got the sword and the shield.
Yeah, the mask was, and the facial part of it was kind of what was giving me Guyver vibes.
Yeah, so I don't know whether he ever used the second theme and then decided, oh, let's go back to the first because it's the better theme.
I heard the second theme. The first theme is certainly catchy.
Yes. It's the da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da at the start. And then you know you're in for a good time. I didn't watch the... I'm sure the next episode bit was subtitled, so I don't know what happens next. You know, he looks like he tries to flip the dresses of the two new characters.
Yeah, he tries to flip the dresses, and it looks as though they stick around, and he makes a comment about the fact that they're bugging him and sticking around. And I think the suggestion, I think from the title, is that the second episode is going to maybe explain who they are and why they're there. But they're obviously, as they're in the end credits, I'm assuming they are a permanent fixture and presumably they, along with his grandfather, are going to guide him on his path of being Liger.
Yeah, and the main bad guy seems to be like a glowing face in a wall, a fairly humanoid-looking woman, and then a typical Gona guy, two-faced weirdo. And it looks like there's another person shows up next episode as well, some blonde guy who I assume is also a baddie. In The Red Lion Burns. Looks like you get some sort of lion form in the next... I think it has, like, loads...
You see that in the intro, don't you?
Yeah, I looked at the Japanese Wikipedia page, and it lists, like, how many different forms... Which forms appear in each episode. It looks like he has so many forms in this.
Oh.
You can just imagine the toys.
Yeah, I don't know whether... How well they did. I think the wrestler was the most successful part of this entire endeavour. So, would you have watched it... If it had been on TV in 89 for you, Gary?
Oh, absolutely. This would have been right up there with all the other stuff I was watching at the time. The catchy intro would have had me hooked, and then the over-the-top action, I'd have been loving every minute of this. Like, Liger would have been, like, up there alongside Lino from Thundercats, and I'd have been like, if there had been toys, I'd have wanted those. This would have been right up my alley. Even without knowing about, obviously, Liger the Wrestler that came later, I'd have totally watched this.
How about you, Anthony?
I think I would have done, kind of through obligation, that it was an action show, but I do not like the characters at all. I think, even as a kid, I would have felt Ken... what's he called again?
He's Ken Tiger, I think.
Ken, yeah. I do not like him as a character. So I would have watched it, but I don't think I would have enjoyed it that much. I would have probably skimmed past all the characters and just enjoyed the action that probably happens in the second half of each episode.
Yeah, I think I'd have watched it and I'd have been, is this the Inhumanoids? Am I finally seeing the Inhumanoids? And now I've realised it wasn't the Inhumanoids. Because my experience of the Inhumanoids was only when they ran the Marvel comic in either Transformers or Action Force. I can't remember which one it was. I never saw the cartoon, never saw the toys. To the point where when I later saw like artwork for Guyver, I was like, was the Inhumanoids based on Guyver? No. But it's that same sort of like Geiger inspired like 80s monstrosity design. Yeah, I guess the bad guys, you kind of had it as, it's not the Visionaries, which would have looked like this. What's the other one? Skeleton Warriors. I think that was in the 90s, wasn't it? Skeleton Warriors. I feel like the bad guys had like some sort of, similar monstrous looking design.
Monstrous look.
Yeah, I was trying to think of anything with sort of similar sort of bio-armory themes that was on telly. Over here when I was a kid. No, I can't think of anything.
No.
Okay. Centurions was people in suits, but it's different type of suit and not the same scale. They weren't huge.
Yeah, they stuck things onto their suits, didn't they?
Yeah. I'm just looking at the Centurions. So cheesy looking.
But there's only three of them, so unlike Action Force G.I. Joe, it was like... But having said that, I never saw the toys anywhere, so it didn't make any difference.
Well, this looks like there's a massive squad of them. There's like...
Oh, it looks like they're, I think those are the villains, aren't they? I think the other guys are.
Oh, is
there's,
it
there's
right.
a villain that's got a similar type of deal with the armour.
I forgot there was a lady and an orangutan on the good guy's side. But,
does the orangutan get a suit, or is it...
I don't remember what the orangutan did at all. I just remember the visuals of, there was like one for land, one for sea, one for air.
Yep.
And then orangutan.
I eliminated every other, and the things stuck onto their suits for different situations. But yes, I had no recollection of what the bad guys looked like, or that there was an orangutan in it.
The monkey probably does like computers and stuff. It's probably a genius monkey.
That's or it could I'm just thinking. Be a mascot, because it's the 80s.
True.
Then over to 1997 for Tokyo Pig, a.k.a. Fair, then Partly Piggy. First published in 1980, Fair, then Partly Piggy is a series of picture books by Shiro Yamada. In 1988, there was a theatrical adaptation by O Production and Gakken, that has recently been released in the US by Discotech Media. Then in 1997, Group Tac and SPE Visual Works produced a TV series for TV Tokyo based on the book series, and that is what we'll concern ourselves with today. In 2002, it was aired in America on ABC Family under the title Tokyo Pig. The story follows the adventures of Noriyasu Hatakiyama, as the doodlings in his journal come to life, initially creating the titular pig, Harry Buta. The original air date was Thursday, July the 3rd, 1997. What was Anthony watching? As we learn, he probably wasn't watching this, because as far as I know, he never watched the BBC as a kid. And I'm not going down
to... I don't know what I was watching.
I'm not travelling to London every week to dig out a TV Times from the British Library. Dino Babies.
Yes.
Tell us about Dino Babies, Anthony, because I have no knowledge of Dino Babies.
Well, I recall I didn't recognise the name, and then after looking, I was like, oh no, I recognise the dinosaurs, and they're all like kind of their own colour. Their look is very much their personality. So there's like a geeky one with glasses. You know, you get the drill.
Yeah.
And other than that, I don't remember a whole lot about it, but I watched it.
They've kind of got a bit of a Muppets physique to them, of where the eyes are positioned.
Though I feel I would have watched this earlier than the age I was at when this came out.
Yeah, I suspect this was a bit late. Today you had Wimbledon 97 and cricket third test, so it was eating into some of the kids' TV time.
Oh, right. And I certainly wouldn't have been watching that garbage.
So this may have been throwing a bone to the babies who've been crying for 3 hours. They haven't got to watch what they wanted.
But yeah, those characters certainly look familiar, but I couldn't tell you anything more about them.
I've never seen these dinosaurs before in my life. How about you, Gary?
No, I have never seen Dino Babies. I don't know. I'm just trying to think. 97, I probably wasn't even watching CITV by that point either, to be fair.
Then we've got Return to Jupiter, live-action sci-fi drama. Is this Australian? Yes, it is Australian. I was like, if it's a drama on children's TV, children's BBC in the 90s, good chance that it's Australian.
I think it's the kind of thing I would not have enjoyed as a kid, but maybe enjoyed now. Like, I mean, it looked very low budget and like of its time, but I didn't watch live action stuff. Like, if I had a choice to watch something, it would be a cartoon.
It was the sequel to Escape from Jupiter.
Oh, they've got to go back. For whatever reason.
Then you had News Round, and then you had something called The Biz.
The Beers. Let's have a quick peek at that.
Assume it's a drama of some kind. Because it's Beers. Got a cast list.
Yeah, it's a kids' drama series at a fictional stage school. The name does sound familiar, but whether I watched it or not. Apparently, I never watched anything. I must have just sat in silence when I got in from school. But, I don't think I watched this in the same way as I would have watched, you know, Dino Babies. Yeah.
In the evening, you could have watched Smith and Jones if you're old enough.
I know who those two are, but I've never watched them ever. Never mind when I was too young for them.
And on BBC Two, in the morning, I'd forgotten that by this point they were showing kids' shows on BBC Two before you went to school.
Mm.
You could have watched Boomin.
Definitely watched.
The Lowdown.
Don't know what the Lowdown... That sounds like a live-action like news show for kids.
Let's have a look what it is.
Kids, TV.
Or at least some sort of factual thing. The Children's Award-winning documentary series follows an exhausting day in the life of a Gloucester family.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing I wouldn't have... I don't know watch documentaries at that age.
And then Charlie Chalk.
I know Charlie Chalk used to... I don't know whether I would have watched it then.
Was Charlie Chalk still going in 97?
I think they carry on repeating, yes, because it was 87 was when it first aired.
Yeah, I certainly know Charlie Chalk from probably when I was younger. So
I just did a quick Google IMDb do a TV debut section, and stuff that debuted on television in 97 that I would have watched, cartoons, Johnny Bravo debuted 97. I'm assuming it debuted over here the same year.
It might have been a little later, because that's often the way.
Okay. Buffy the Vampire Slayer came out, started in 97. Not that I've watched that a huge amount.
Obviously, that is interesting based on the opening credits of the show we're about to talk about.
Yeah, South Park started in 97, as did King of the Hill. And Daria, because the spin-off from Beavis and Butthead. The Angry Beavers, I never watched that. I think that was it. Oh, and of course, this is what Askew would have been watching. Debuting in 1997.
Come on, then.
Teletubbies.
I did watch Teletubbies, of course I did.
There you go. That was it.
I definitely did watch Teletubbies, because I used to be weirdly fascinated by it all, and there's certainly something special about it, and even though I was way too old to be the target audience, I used to watch it. I used to hate the bit where they would repeat the scene they've just shown. That's what they used to do.
That's why you don't like Pop Team Epic.
That's it. It boils back down to Teletubbies. But yeah, they used to, like, they'd look through the TVs on their stomach, you'd see, like, kids drawn shit, and then they'd be like, again, and show the exact same 3-minute or 4-minute segment again. And got away with it.
Power Rangers.
Turn it off.
Turbo.
Power Rangers, I watched.
Yeah, Power Rangers Turbo was 97, although, again, if that was America, maybe we got it. We'd have been watching the first series.
Yeah, I didn't watch Turbo.
I'm trying to think. No, we got the first around 95, I want to say.
Okay, so Power Rangers Turbo, we'd have probably got that on time then, for 97.
UK number one was Puff Daddy and Faith Evans' I'll Be Missing You. So presumably Notorious B.I.G. had recently died.
Yep. Don't know what the song is, to be honest.
You're not missing out.
It's a
Sting sample, isn't it? Or a Police sample?
Yeah, Sting sample of the I'll Be Watching You.
Oh, okay, I like that song. But...
Well, honestly, from your part, you've got to be loyal to you.
Yeah, he recently won an award, actually.
Like some local achievement heroes. Award.
He is.
So, Tokyo Pig, a.k.a. Fair Than Partly Piggy. First of all, which title do you prefer, Anthony?
Tokyo Pig.
Okay. I prefer Fair Than Partly Piggy.
It's too long. It's just too long.
I wasn't sure. So was that actually the series name? I thought Fair Than Partly Piggy was just that specific episode.
No,
I didn't realize that was the full name.
The series name, yes.
Okay.
So the series is directed by Shinichi Watanabe, who you may know from XL Saga, and
never
also
liked it,
Puni Puni Puome.
Didn't like that.
He also did the storyboard for this first episode and was the director on this first episode. The screenplay is by Yoshio Urasawa, who also wrote Lupin the Third, The Legend of the Gold of Babylon, And from an earlier episode of this podcast, Fushigi Yugi.
Oh, yeah, I picked that one as well, didn't I?
You did. Yeah. Having said that, looking at his credits, there's a good chance if you pick anything, he may have written it. He's one of those people.
Got around.
The animation, director, and character design is by Rian Shino, who also did the similar roles on Calimero, and Now and Then, Here and There, something quite different from Tokyo Pig.
I've seen a little bit of that, and it's something I always wanted to watch back in the day. I think it's quite a sad story, isn't it?
And I forgot it is, yes, but from people you wouldn't expect to write that sort of story or direct that sort
right.
of story. What is this episode called? Let me have a look. I forgot to write it down. When Pigs Fly.
Of course it is.
Or Boo Boo Booter Panic. So it's probably Oink Oink Pig Panic, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Anthony, tell us what happens in the first episode of Tokyo Pig.
Right, so... I'm going to refer to the main character as Spencer.
I was going
to
say,
for some reason,
before we start, we should describe the state of the fucking subtitles we were using.
Oh, God.
So these are, again, from our notorious source, the anonymous Russian, whatever they're called, RRR. and they appear to be a mix of the English script and the Japanese script and just general fudging where they weren't sure. Luckily, being a kids show based on kids picture books, I'm not sure really necessarily how much you need to know the subtitles to follow the story.
Yeah, I never even thought about that. I think you definitely could have got away without them.
I think it's like nuance you'd miss, most of the gags work in the subtitles, but annoyingly characters switch between the English and Japanese names throughout.
Which I was second guessing because Spencer's parents call him Noriyasu.
Yes.
And he kind of refers to himself as Spencer, I think.
He does. They add something in the subtitles to say, oh, that's his nickname. It's like, what are you doing?
And then there's another character referred to as Tiffany.
Yes. But maybe she
is. Yes, it's easy for me to remember, but.
Yeah. Anyway. Got that out of the way, so any confusion in the names, that's where it's coming from.
And I'm going to refer to him as Spencer, because it's easier for me to pronounce. So, he's the main character who I think... I love his design. I want to get that out there. I think he has got such a unique look about him. Like, it's kind of like a slick back hair with like thick brows. He's like an older Shin-chan look about him, but not quite Shin-chan-y. Anyway, he's at school and he gets this homework to write a diary. And basically you've got to be very truthful in this diary because no one is going to read it. The teacher stipulates that. And he runs home and you see the outside of his house. And he gets into his house and he's looking for his parent. His mother at this point. And hoping his mother and sister aren't home. And it's kind of like, I wonder why. So he works on this diary. And he remembers earlier on the day where this girl was kind of, like proposing to him or like kind of, you know, asking him out on a date, that kind of thing. And she's like got these big long, she's in like a big dress and like she's got locks. And he says, no, I'm not interested. Basically, I would never want to marry someone like you. And he puts it in the diary and he kind of hides it away just as his mother. And sister.
First of all, his sister appears from underneath the desk.
Yes, they're playing hide and seek.
Yeah.
So his mother was in the cupboard, and they come out, and his mother is like, "You better not be studying. You better not be studying because if you study, you turn into your father." Which I didn't get what his father was. I guess like a salaryman.
Yeah, and he was now he worked really hard, and then he lost his job, and he now has to work at her dad's factory, but he's happier doing that than when he was working as a salaryman.
Well, yeah. So the idea is, if you study, the more you study, the stupider you are.
Yes.
So his family's pretty backwards at this point, anyway. So I was like, okay. So, but he wants to study. You know, he's a good boy.
Yes. Yeah, they forced him to leave the house and go and play with his friends.
Yes. Which maybe for two reasons: one, to not let him study. Or to sneak a peek at the diary, which they end up doing. And he returns home, and like his mom's cooking or whatever else in the kitchen, and they reference this girl, and he's so embarrassed. And I kind of got that secondhand embarrassment from this cartoon. I hate when somebody mentions, especially at that age, like if you had a crush on someone and somebody mentions that person's name, even it would be like, because I used to go red quite a lot when I was younger. Anyway, he's like, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to write lies in this diary so I won't be ashamed. Like I won't get shamed when people read it, inevitably read it. And he doesn't actually write in the diary. It's all like a picture. Based.
Yeah, because it's kind of like those exercise books you'd get with like a big space for drawing and then a small section for writing, which I don't think I've...
Yeah, I missed those days.
Yeah, I mean, I remember having one for... It was kind of like... I remember drawing pictures of birds in it.
And then writing what kind of bird it was.
Yeah, that sort of thing, yeah.
Great times, that kind of stuff at school. So he decides to draw a picture of his mother's neck just growing, just getting longer. And his mom comes upstairs, and lo and behold, her neck is grown. It's like twisting around the room, and he kind of believe it. It then goes out the window, and his father comes home.
And his little sister's riding on the back of the neck.
Oh, well. Yeah.
And sliding down it.
It's kind of creepy looking.
Well, yeah, and it's yokai, which has got that thing going on with her.
Oh.
It was the fact that she's like so happy that her neck's grown really long.
Oh, these are accepting it. They're very, but I mean, it's a strange family, as we've already learned, so, but they're fine with it.
Yeah, and the father doesn't even seem shocked that
his wife's
got a long neck now and she can stick it out of the top window and down to the floor and talk to him, and his sister's riding it and finds it hilarious. It's all, they're all just sort of taking it in their stride.
But, Spencer does not, and he panics, so he quickly rubs out this drone. He's like, oh god, it seems like things that I write down in here are coming true. So he thinks, oh, what can I do to kind of test this theory? So he draws tempura with pencils as they're filling. And he's like, oh, well, if we go downstairs and that's what my mom is cooking, that's, you know, we know it's true. So it goes downstairs. She's cooking tempura, and the father and Spencer at the same time ask what's for dinner, and they just pencil tempura, and it gets served, and it's weird looking, and they're biting into chunks of pencils. I was like, ooh, I don't like this. This is for kids. What if kids swallow pencils?
You haven't mentioned yet that all throughout this, there is an announcer who comments on everything.
Oh, shit, I totally forgot. It's like, it's very, like, fourth wall breaking, so if he... She'll comment on what he's doing. I can't remember that in particular.
Yes. And we'll point out not to eat pencils because it's a cartoon.
Thank God. The father starts to choke. And of course, what counters pencils? So the mother gets like a huge eraser or a normal size eraser and starts doing it on a, what do you call them things? Grater? Yeah, she starts
grating it like it's grating cheese into a bowl.
And he's like chugging away on this eraser, and it's like, oh, like what a relief. That's the pencil counter.
That was my favorite joke in the entire thing.
It is good.
Yeah, the pencil counter. And then again, the little presenter appearing and saying, erasers don't actually counter pencils. This is just a cartoon.
Yes. Thank God. I was going to start swallowing. And Spencer is obviously, I think he's still in doubt at this point.
I think he thinks he's dreamt it.
Yeah, yeah. So he thinks, okay, I'm going to write, it's going to be Sunny Pigs tomorrow. And he wakes, he shuts his book, whatever else, puts it away in the drawer, goes to sleep, and he wakes up early in the morning to the sounds of pigs oinking outside. And he looks out the window, and there's thousands of pigs flying through the sky, generating sunlight, presumably. It looks like a lovely day. And he's like, oh, shit. And his parents hear these oinks and come running up the stairs. And as they're on the way up, saying, is that a pig? Have you got pigs up there? He starts rubbing out the drone, and they start disappearing, all this stuff. But under his hand, he leaves one little piglet. And his parents are like, you can't keep this pig here. And his dad, this is probably my favourite joke, his dad has this scary face that you don't actually see on screen. And it happens a few times, and he's, like, very annoyed. You can presume it's very annoyed, but it petrifies the family, and it's out of shot.
Yeah. I think they also say it was a good job we didn't see it. He wasn't facing this direction.
Yeah. And he basically says, dump the pig. You've got to dump this pig. So off he goes into the city. He writes a note and kind of puts it outside of a butcher's and says, I don't know, you're going to make... You want to be pork cutlets or something to that effect, or a pork bowl or something like that. And he decides to pick it up. He says, oh, I can't do that to you. And they go to the park. And then for some reason, he imagines the pig as Pig Godzilla.
Yes.
And there's this huge moment where the pig is essentially destroying the city. And anything that Spencer thinks of is occurring, and he's like, I need to stop thinking of this stuff. I need to stop thinking. And he thinks, oh, but wouldn't it be cool if... And then there's jets coming flying, and they've got pig pilots and shooting pig missiles. The three... I don't know my Godzilla.
Pig Ghidorah. Yeah. Pig King Ghidorah turns up.
Yeah, shows up. And they're fighting. And he's hitting his head against this vent.
Right, because he's like, what if they try to destroy the world? And he's like, oh no, if I think about them destroying the world, they'll destroy the world. And he has to start knocking himself out by hitting his head against a vending machine.
And he wakes up, and he's out. He's got a little plaster on his head, if I remember rightly, and he's out in the park. And he's, you know, it's dangerous for a little boy to be out that kind of late. You know, he could catch cold. The pig goes back to the family home and is kind of tugging on the family, saying, you've got to come with me. Like a lassie moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lassie moment. Jimmy's stuck on the wall.
Exactly. And I'm sure his father does the scary face again.
Yes, he does.
I don't know, but it's such a funny moment. And they go rescue the boy, Spencer. He returns and said, how did you find me? Oh, well, thankfully the pig came and saved the day. And then they say, oh, you can keep the pig. And according to the subtitles, they call it Sunny Pig.
Yeah, Harry Booter is what it is.
Right. And I just thought that, do they mention that might change? I'm sure that's, they say, but we might change that.
I think the little, like, sort of narrator presenter, porter woman, she says it. She says, and his name is Sunny Pig. And then says something like, is it like subject to change or something like that? Or for now, I think it is.
Yeah, so I don't know whether it changes its name each episode to... Maybe it ends up as Tokyo Pig, I don't know. So my question is, was it actually a dream? Not the diary thing, but the Godzilla.
I don't know. Godzilla. I'm not sure it matters.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Because, yeah. But I enjoyed this way more than I thought I was going to do. I kind of regret the instant I said, "Oh, I'll pick Tokyo Pig." I thought, "Oh, it's going to be stupid, isn't it? I'm not going to enjoy this." But especially against the other two that we watched, I think this is a pretty good show.
Oh, this is the best of these three for sure.
Yeah. Do you know if I would have liked it as a kid? I think I probably would have watched it, but I think I appreciate it more now.
I watched some of the dub, because it is on Daily Motion, and there's all the random episodes scattered around the internet. And it's not too bad. Some of the jokes changed, but the general gist is pretty much... Because obviously you've got to, because it's so frantic. What can you cut out? It's like the weird things of, like, when their secret base, him and his two friends...
Of course, yeah.
...is under a temple. It's under a sushi restaurant in the dub.
Oh, right. It seems like a change that they could have just kept the same, like said church.
Well, I get, yeah, but I think it's because they were like, oh, it looks so Japanese, and we're trying to pretend that it's in America.
Oh, right.
So what would look so Japanese in America?
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because you wouldn't get like a shrine in States.
But yeah, definitely holds up my theory that as much as people like XL Saga and Puni Puni Purome and like other stuff aimed at teenagers and adults, I think Shinichi Watanabe is best when he's doing a kids show.
Well, I hate those other things. Like, I literally really don't like them, but This is good. I don't think I would sort at, like, source anymore. I don't think I need to watch anymore, but, you know, I think you could jump in at any point and probably get something from it. Is his little diary a recurrent thing?
I think...
He has control of, or
I think every episode is, like, some sort of thing he either thinks... Because I'm not sure whether it has to be, because the pig seems to be able to initiate it by sticking his snout on his head, if he just thinks
Of course, yeah, and it, like, triggers the beginning of the change, or whatever he's thinking.
I don't know. Yeah. I've not watched any more than this first episode. I've watched this first episode twice now, and I've enjoyed it both times I've watched it.
I like the family. I think the family itself is a good driving force. Like, there's none of those characters I thought, oh, this character is so frustrating.
Oh, yeah. The introduction of the mum hiding in the cupboard and straight out saying that you shouldn't do your homework. Loved it. Looks like there was an entire series with weird fan subs or weird Hong Kong subs, but looks like there was a long, long time ago, so finding those now would be trickier.
As you say, I think you'd probably get enough from it to watch without subs.
Yes, because a lot of the enjoyment is from the look of the thing. The thing I really liked is whenever you got a close-up of the pig's face when they were wandering through the city, he had the texture of paper to his face.
Oh, yes, when it's given the sad eyes.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good show. And I was surprised, I think.
How about you, Gary? Would you have watched this?
I think I would have done. Thinking back, like, 97, so I'd have been in my late teens. And I think it's the sort of thing that I may have dismissed it if I'd have only watched the intro. But I think if I'd have been sat down and watched it, thinking back to the point that when I was 17, I still watched things like Johnny Bravo, Powerpuff Girls, that type of stuff. I'd have totally sat and watched and enjoyed this because I think the gags it wouldn't have felt like a conventional kids show. So I'd have quite happily enjoyed it, I think.
I hope the scary dad face returns every episode. But I think you would need the sub. I mean, you kind of know he looks angry and whatnot, but I like the idea that it's like, if you could see it, if you could see this face, you'd be petrified.
No, I found a source for all of it. I'm looking.
How many episodes was this?
61.
Huh.
Obviously, because it's Shinichi Watanabe show, he is in it. One of the friends is him. Not him, like, playing.
He's
him.
A child.
A child one, yes.
Yeah.
There's one of his friends has got a perm and a red jacket.
Little glasses on
as
well.
I think the other friend might be supposed to be the sumo wrestler who's in a later anime that he directed. Looking at other screenshots of him now. I've no idea how much this resembles the books, or how much it resembles the original film. But yeah, I definitely was enjoying what I was watching. But yeah, I thought when they're doing the monkey dance at the start, I was like, oh, maybe that's because of Johnny Bravo. But this started almost exactly the same time as Johnny Bravo started, like 4 days previous. So maybe it was just in the air to do the monkey.
Yep.
Because again, that is kind of what it reminded me of. That's weird. God, that's weird. Did Johnny Bravo appear before the series started? Ah, there was. Yeah, there was a short in 95. Ah, so that may be it. Maybe he was just... They were watching Cartoon Network at the time. Because the stuff from Cartoon Network in those late 90s definitely was good stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Righty-ho! One other thing I forgot to mention in my notes is that Noriyasu is voiced by Omi Maname, who was also Hayat in XL Saga, furthering the XL Saga connection. Also Ruri and Desco. This is a very different role to either of those two roles. A lot more energy she has to put in this one. Righty-ho! I do believe that is everything for this week's The Anime That Didn't Make Us. Anything you want to plug, Gary?
No, not really.
Excellent. Anthony, where can people find you on Twitch?
If they search Ant Askew, that's where you'll find us.
And we'll be back next week with the return of the famous anime podcast. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You saying goodbye, Gary?
Bye-bye.